11 minutes to 8 on Wednesday night's Arena. Owen Dwyer's number games brings us to a future and a country called Ireland Corpo. The world is a matriarchy run by the Chinese. Most men stay at home to raise children. Most women go out to work. And in this ultra-rational, data-consuming, corporatist dystopia, the gap between rich and poor, or boomers and no boomers, as they're called, grows ever wider. And Owen Dwyer is with me in studio now. Give me a sense of this new Ireland that you're describing to us. And obviously the fact that it's Ireland Corpo gives us a sense that it's a business-orientated spot to live, Owen.
Yeah, well, in the future that we're looking at in this book, big business and government have come together. And they're using the data that they're collecting to not only market stuff at us, but to control our lives as well.
Yeah, give me a sense of the kind. Like, data is a big business right now, but it's indeed on a whole new level in this new society.
Yeah, well, again, I mean, it seems to be the direction that it might be heading in. I mean, where will this end up, the amount of data that they're collecting? And that was kind of the idea behind the book. The thing, I suppose, is that the characters in the book don't realise that they're being controlled, and they don't realise that they're being watched any more than any of us do when we walk down the street.
Yeah, well, the fact that you've touched on it there, you know, how much are we heading in that direction?
Yeah.
You know, what was it? Was there something in your own life that sparked off this consideration around data, this consideration about how much of this is actually being gathered about us as we go about our ordinary day business?
Well, I was talking actually to my son, who was working and living over in London, about his love life, actually. And he was explaining to me about how Tinder works. And you swipe this way or you swipe. And that was completely alien to me.
What age is he? Is he in his 20s type of thing?
At this point, he's in his 30s.
Right.
But when he was talking to me about this, he was a kind of a single guy in his mid-20s. And this was new to me. Dating for me when I was young was standing in a phone box and pressing button A. I don't know what it was like for you. But this thing that
and
you
button
could,
B if you were lucky.
If you were
lucky.
You've
got to set a longer conversation.
And inevitably, the father always answered. But for these guys, it's different. They have an array of people. They can swipe right or swipe left. And it just seemed to be very convenient. And I thought there was a lot of prejudice in it, and I thought it was very unfair to the people that weren't being selected.
I was going to ask you that. You say it seemed to be very convenient, but were there other adjectives that sprung to your mind?
Yeah, well, I thought it was very, it's quite brutal. That, you know, people are judging you on your appearance or on a photograph. And I just thought, like, where will this stop? If we're just, you know, making our minds up about things on units of data like that, where does it stop and where does the control stop?
So your character then and the young man that we spend most of the novel with is this young man called Lee, himself a number cruncher. What's the nature of his job, his nature of his work?
He works for a large corporation, and it's basically a marketing company. So they're using this data and they're direct calling people to encourage them to invest money with them. And they're investing the money based on all of this data that they get. And his job is to flog the telemarketers to get them to make the calls so that they can get the business. He's come up through the ranks himself. He's the only male that works there. It's a completely female environment. He's being promoted. And he hasn't got there in a completely honest way. He's kind of slept his way to the top a little bit, you know, because he is a bit of a slapper.
So this brings us to the gender swap, if you like, that you've done now. I think probably, I would hope in today's society, there's a little bit more gender balance than there is in this book in terms of all the men are stuck at home.
Yeah.
All the women are predominantly out working. Why did you switch that? I suppose the traditional role is obviously the other way around, and we're hoping 20 or 30 years ago, but why did you want that swap?
Well, first of all, I exaggerated it, and I took it right back to the worst excesses of male chauvinism from maybe the 1950s. If you remember, you know, when we used to watch the old John Wayne movies, if the leading lady gave him a problem, he gave her a slap on the face and she melted into his arms and was grateful for that. And that was kind of accepted in movies at the time and in popular culture at the time. And you're right, we have moved on an awful long way from that. But when you're writing a book like this and you're trying to make a point, you have to exaggerate, I think. And yes, it is a little bit caricatured, but it is just to make the point.
So in fact, what you've done in some ways is the females in this book are given all of those chauvinistic characteristics.
Indeed, yeah.
And they're treating the men in this book the way traditionally women were treated in popular culture and in real life, possibly back in the 50s and 60s as well.
Yeah, and
50s
I've done that
predominantly, I suppose.
Yeah, I've done that for two reasons. One, because I wanted to isolate the chauvinism and to take it into a different environment so it would be more recognisable for what it is, that it's not a male thing or it's not a female thing. It's a thing in itself. It's prejudice. And the other is, it's actually quite funny when you reverse the roles in a way. It can be interesting to look at a man being slapped by a woman instead, or a man being treated like a piece of meat. And, you know, a lot of men are uncomfortable with reading the book because of that. But I think it's an important message to put out.
Yeah, so by actually reversing it, you put a highlight on the action itself.
Yes.
And you take the gender out of it in some ways, but you're certainly not condoning it in any way.
Absolutely not, you know.
The other thing that really struck me at one point, I can't remember where specifically this comes in the book, and I think it's Lee that says it, nobody questions the world we live in. And he goes on to say, rather like the dead generations of yesteryear, I think is the precise quote that he means. Do you feel that is going on right now, that nobody is questioning what's happening?
Absolutely. I mean, we do accept, especially in Ireland. I think that in other countries, they might be a little bit more militant. And I don't know whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, but we do accept a lot. We tend to just get on with our lot in life. Most of us are just concerned with, going to work and raising our kids, and we don't get caught up in politics, or we don't get caught up in great ideological arguments. And even people who live in deprived areas, they get to accept the level of existence that they have. And that's life. Whether that's right or not, I don't know. But that is part of the human condition, to get on with it.
The Athlone that you present us with here, and again, it's a fictionalised Athlone.
Yes, of course.
But Athlone is quite definitely a no-boomers area of the country. Now, poor Athlone. Why did you choose Athlone for this particular aspect?
I have nothing against Athlone. I think Athlone is a lovely town. Mm. But I was approaching it from the point of view, it was the inland, it's away from the coastal areas, it's kind of hidden, purely for that reason. And it's a kind of a ghetto. Poverty is being swept under the carpet in this book, in this world that we're talking about.
Yeah, in fact, you're not allowed to talk about poverty.
No, it's not that you're not allowed, but it's frowned upon. Because there's a great liberal ethos in this society as well. It's ostensibly a liberal society. But liberals can be very right-wing in their own way. So if you disagree with them, their weapon is ridicule. And people that try to argue against poverty are ridiculed. And, you know, they're told things like, look, poor people are given the same opportunities as everybody else. And if they don't take them up, then that's their business.
You've also put China is pretty much in charge here.
Sure.
In fact, it's a triumvirate, even though that's a three men, but it's a triumvirate of women.
Of elderly Chinese women.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's an oxymoron or not, but it is three elderly Chinese women who are kind of in charge here.
Yeah.
What's happened to the United States, or as you would have it in the book, or it is in the book, the reunited states?
Yes, I suppose historically, from the point of view of the novel, men have made an absolute hames of the world. They've destroyed and ruined everything. So women have stepped in and taken over. And this has started in the United States. This is where it all started. Mm. Probably because it's the most technically advanced and economically advanced country today. So I imagined that if there was a collapse, that would be the first place where it would happen. I think China taking over is something that a lot of people believe will happen one way or the other. I don't know if that will happen. And I wanted to put elderly females in charge as opposed to middle-aged white men, just to ask the question, like, why should middle-aged white men be in charge of the world? I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah, it's the sort of questions that you're posing there. The other thing that seems to come under the microscope later in the book, I don't know if it's Big Pharma or not, but certainly drugs become a very important aspect in Lee's life and in the way his life goes. Was Big Pharma in your mind here, or was there something else that was worrying you?
Big Pharma was not in my mind. Really, it was human nature and the nature of addiction and excess. And Lee just becomes an addict.
Mm.
But instead
of the 66, that particular corporation who are busy selling drugs, you're basically talking about drug dealers rather than Big Pharma there, are you?
Yes, indeed, yeah. And the need for a constant fix and constant stimulation. Mm. And
I mean, as you can get, I hope people get a sense from the book that we're following Lee's story here, and it's he's kind of looking for love in some ways is what he's looking for. And I don't want to go in too much of that because we'll give too much away in terms of what he finds out. But how bleak an outlook have you, or how optimistic are you in terms of the world that we might be heading to if we're heading towards Ireland, Corporal?
I don't know whether to be optimistic or pessimistic. The book isn't really meant to be a prediction of the future. Mm. It's really an adventure story with a little bit of a love story thrown into it as well. And you're right, Lee is a hopeless case. He's a hopeless romantic and keeps finding himself in more and more trouble. But what kind of a world we're all going to end up in? Your guess is as good as mine, but I suppose the point is that if we keep going in this direction, the question is it going to end?
Yeah, so in some ways you might be talking about the future, but you're probably commenting on the present, aren't you?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, that's Owen Dwyer, beg your pardon, speaking to us about his novel Number Games, which is published by Liberties.